Hello, friends. Gather the kids around and put on songs you don't know by heart. You're listening to Blame It on Buffett.
Well, I sailed from Lauderdale down to Key Largo. Crossed the Gulf on a fast sloop, and I sailed the Abacos. As a kid, I read Contiki, and now all the pirate books too. There's just so many places on my list to see. I'm going crazy just trying to choose.
Welcome back to Blame It on Buffett. I know that I said that I was only doing one episode a month right now, but this is an extra surprise bonus episode for the holidays. It doesn't have anything to do with the holidays, but it's just a little holiday gift from me to you, because I'm really excited about this guest. And I didn't want to say in the last episode, just in case something happened and like we didn't work out the timing or whatever. But I'm so happy because Delaney Buffett is my guest this week. So I'm really happy that she agreed to be on. She's done a number of interviews now because of the Songs You Don't Know by Heart video series that Jimmy's been doing. She's been the one filming it and helping with editing and all of that. So it was really great to have her on to talk about the film series, but also just a little bit about, you know, herself, her life, being a Buffett. We just had a really nice chat. And so I wanted to put this episode out sooner rather than later, just so you all could listen to it. And I wanted to say that I should have mentioned it in the actual episode. We did not. But in addition to the video series, there is a new album out called Songs You Don't Know by Heart. It's based on the video series. So the songs, it has the songs from the video series on that are like on the album. It's not just Jimmy and the guitar, but it's a like stripped down, more acoustic version of all the songs. So that's really cool to have them all in one place. And you can get that any of the places that you can get Jimmy Buffett stuff. And so go check that out. Go check out the video series. And please enjoy this interview with Delaney Buffett. All right. Welcome to this very special episode of Blame It on Buffett, partly because it's special because I have been doing one a month, but this is my second one in December. So that's very special, but mostly because my guest this week is Delaney Buffett. Delaney, thanks so much for being here.
Of course. Thanks so much for having me on.
Yeah. We were just talking about this beforehand, but I was just saying that you've probably done more interviews in the last month or whenever because of this video series, Songs You Don't Know by Heart, than before. Had you ever like done a lot of this kind of thing before, or is this the first time?
No, honestly, this is, I'd done a podcast. I had done a couple interviews here and there, like, you know, for like random things, but not really. I mean, I had done Paul Leslie's podcast like a few years ago with my writing partner, but I spoke with him again, but no, I haven't really done that many interviews. I'm very shy, so I like doing them. I love talking with people, but like it's not something I definitely seek out to do. But if people want to have me on, I'm flattered and love talking with them. But you know, it's not something where I'm like, oh, yeah,
you're like, let have me on your podcast. Yeah. Like let me come on your podcast to talk about myself.
Yeah, exactly.
I know. I mean, like, I'm the host of this podcast, and I still get nervous before every episode because a lot of them, especially this year, have been with people I've never met before or talked to before.
Yeah.
And even though it's not like everyone's super friendly, super like there's no reason to like be stressed about it at all, but sure. I still get nervous every time because I also am like kind of shy, like have a hard time meeting new people. So I feel you on that for sure.
Yeah.
But also like this is maybe different because it's, you know, more to do with your dad. Whereas I don't know if podcasts you did in the past were more because of like you and like your filmmaking or other things that was more about you. And this is like more because people are like, oh, Jimmy Buffett is doing a thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's usually about my dad. I don't think anyone.
Oh, really?
Anyone's like, please come on and talk about your short film. I would love that. But
no, we're going to talk about it on this podcast. I promise you that. People better get ready.
No, I think, listen, and I totally get that because, like, again, like a lot of stuff I've done in the past, you know, I think what's great is I think, you know, because I've done stuff with my dad, you know, I think people would like to interview and hear that, but like a lot of people are great. And a lot of times, like I just joked that you don't hear about my short film, but I mean, people have great questions and do actually want, you know, get to know me or about my work. But usually the opener is my dad, but I expect that. And that is something that I am so used to that it's not like I ever am like expecting it to be anything else. Hopefully I will get to a point when that happens. But right now I think it's, something I don't mind. And, you know, the video series is about my dad and I did it with him. So it's not something I shy away from. And I honestly prefer talking about him than myself.
Okay, well, that's good.
So that's fine with me. But yeah, no, I mean, I think I hopefully get to a point where that happens. But for now, I'm happy to talk about this project and everything surrounding it because it's sort of like what's on my plate at the moment, and I really enjoy doing it, so it's a treat to speak about it.
Okay, well, that's good to hear. I felt a little weird asking originally just because I was like, oh, I don't, you know, want her to think that I'm just like some Jimmy Buffett fan that just wants to talk to her because, you know, she's Jim. For anyone listening to this, if you didn't know, her dad is Jimmy Buffett. I don't know why you wouldn't know that if you're listening to this podcast, but just in case you stumbled upon this podcast for no reason. But yeah, so I didn't want you to think that I was just like, oh, I'm going to get Jimmy Buffett's daughter on. Like, I really was excited about this project and you were a huge part of that because you did all the directing and did you do all the editing too?
I did. And I had help with the editing. Chase Coble edited it with me. He edits a lot of stuff for my dad. So he edited it along with Dylan and Rob, who were sort of like the leaders on the project. So it was usually the four of us on a Zoom editing. So I mean, I shot it all on, it was just me and my dad on like an iPhone or an iPhone tripod. We actually had like one of those like influencer LED lights at one point.
Ooh,
that just
fancy.
didn't work at all. So we went back to see, could see the reflection in his glasses, which is pretty
not
funny.
Fancy, I guess then.
Not that fancy. It was like an LED up. I was expecting it because it lights like influencers super well, but it was just like it wasn't really working with the vibe that we were going for. So, but yeah, I mean, it was just me shooting it, but I had help editing it, and I think, you know, I am a lot harsher on my dad than everyone else because he's my dad. I think
right.
When anyone hears their parents speak, they're like, "Oh, don't say that." So I have to have other people I speak to be like, I think we need to cut that out. And then be like, wait, like why? Like, that was funny. I'm like, was it though? And so I need someone to come in and have like an unbiased kin opinion on what he's saying. And they were very helpful with that. And Chase is super helpful. So it was very much a collective effort, at all times. So,
yeah, so
and
you gotta
really
have
fun.
The objective
so.
Influence of people that you're not related to.
Yes, absolutely.
So once again, if anyone doesn't know what we're talking about, Jimmy and Delaney did a project called Songs You Don't Know by Heart, and it was a series of videos, came out this year. And there were, how many, 16 or how many were there? I should have notes, but I don't.
Listen, I should know. I feel like there were 15 videos, 15. Maybe.
Okay.
I mean, there was one less video than there were tracks on the album. So I think there were 15.
Right. Okay.
Dylan's not going to be happy. I don't know that. But I think there were 15, maybe. I'm not sure.
Well, clearly this is not a professional operation because I also didn't. And I like just, so I watched them all as they came out, right? Because I just have to say, like, I was so excited for this project. Seeing musicians that I like play songs sort of like acoustic when you normally only hear the songs like with full band or on the album is so great. And then also one of my favorite things is hearing musicians talk about this, like tell the stories behind songs. So this was like, I was so hyped when I heard this was happening. So I watched the videos all as they came out, and then I actually just rewatched them just, you know, to, so I was in the vibe for this podcast. So I really should have known how many there were.
It didn't bother me. It's 15 or 8 because we recorded a few more than we have released. So I always forget, and it's hard since I didn't have Instagram towards the end of it. I was like losing track, and then so it doesn't matter. And I'm happy you watched all of them, regardless.
Yes. I definitely did. Like I said, like it was just a really cool once. Like another cool thing that I mean, obviously the situation with the pandemic is horrible, and I would. You know, if I could choose to not have that happen, then obviously sure. I would pick that. But there's been a lot of things that have come out of that I don't think we would have gotten otherwise. And mm-hmm. this is sort of that kind of thing, right? Like Jimmy seems like he's probably super busy all the time. And this kind of like low key, just cool, like laid back series probably wouldn't have happened if it wasn't like everybody was locked out in quarantine. What, like, how did it start? Like, what was the idea for this? And how did that come about originally?
Sure. So yeah, he rarely is sitting still. So, I mean, I think also he really wanted to find a way to be able to produce content for his fans since he wasn't able to tour and people were trying to come up with ways. And so, my friend Dylan, who works for him along with Rob Meter, had tweeted out, you know, what are the songs you don't know by heart? Just sort of for fun, and they got like a bunch of replies and it got press coverage. And so then we were kind of talking about it, and we came up together with this idea to just record like an acoustic series because I was living with my parents at the time. I lived with them for 6 months during the pandemic. And we were just sort of like, you know, spitballing ideas. And we were like, we should just have him record all these songs. He's just, you know, he can't go anywhere. And so that's sort of how it came about. And, you know, I think I wanted to keep it simple and easy. And so it was just on an iPhone, and he has a little tiny, like one of those little microphones that you plug into the iPhone that just kind of amplifies the sound a little, but that was basically it. And you know, after I finished work, I would sit with him for a couple of hours, and we would, depending on the day, we would go through like, you know, one or two or three songs. And that's sort of how it came about. And we did it for a while when we were together. And he was just enjoying getting, I know he said something like having a vacation with his former self, but I think he was just enjoying relearning songs. And you know, I think he got a lot better at the guitar again, too, because he was just sitting and playing all day, and he was surprising himself, I think, in that way, too, because I think a lot of the, like you said, he's now used to just a lot of accompaniment on these songs with the full band. So I think it was hard to sort of, you know, travel back in time where it was just him and try to remember how he played the song. So I think he loved doing that. So it was fun for me to watch that. And I think it was fun for him to do it.
Yeah, definitely a huge part of the charm of these videos. And if anyone hasn't watched them, they're on the Jimmy Buffett Facebook page. They're on jimmybuffett.com. You can go there and watch them. But yeah, a big part of the charm is just that it's so sort of unrehearsed. Like, not that he didn't spend time relearning these songs, because I'm sure he has so many songs, there's no way he could like remember them all always at one time. So like, not unrehearsed in that sense, but just sort of like the dialogue, like you ask him questions and then, you know, sometimes he'll start and then not quite get it the first time. So then he'll have to restart.
Yeah.
It's funny you said the thing about like being objective about what was funny or not funny. Cause one of the things I really loved was there were some super funny moments in the editing. Like one of my favorite things is when he would like mess up and then he'd be like, we'll just cut that out. But then you clearly didn't cut it out.
Yeah. I don't think he knows how it works. Laugh. Yeah.
we'll just cut that out later.
Yeah. He'll be like, oh, so you can just cut this in with the song. And while we were watching, I was like, that's just not possible, but okay. And I just kind of let him do it. Yeah. And you know, it was that was a big part of Rob and Dylan's influence too, was like, how raw do you want this to be? And they were like, oh, like we want every like flub in there possible. Like we want it to feel like, which I think was important to me too, right? It's kind of like you said, I think one of my favorite things is like watching, you know, acoustic versions of bands that I love. And I think it's so fun when you get to see someone just sort of like you know, play guitar like you might play guitar, kind of like mess up occasionally. So I think we wanted to keep that in there. I think that sometimes he didn't, but like it wasn't up to him in the end. And anytime I showed him a video, he kind of laughed and was like, oh, I guess. But I mean, he's like pretty funny with that. And I think he was very open about, you know, a lot of, sometimes he had to use a prompter and like people would joke and he'd be like, oh no, like, can you see it in the shop? But like there were some songs that he didn't have to rehearse at all, that he would just start playing and he wouldn't even mess up with. And then there were this Delaney Talks to Statues, I think took him like 105 times. And
I was like, just
I was just sitting there like, okay, well, this is mixed feelings about this, but no, I didn't actually care. But there were some songs that definitely took him longer, but a lot of the times he was able to just pick it up and it was funny to see which songs those were.
Yeah, that's, I think it's, as a fan, you know, that's that sort of relatableness of like everything not being perfect and glossy just makes it so much more likable. And I think like Jimmy as an artist, like overall, is just kind of, you know, he just seems really accessible for how much music he's written, you know, like how, I guess, famous, quote unquote famous he is. Like, he just seems super laid back and accessible. And I think that's a big part of like why the fandom that likes him, you know, is like that sort of attitude. So this really seemed to bring that in like an like extra fun way, I guess.
Yeah, he was excited to do it too, I think. So it was, I think it, what was great was how, you know, he came to me every day and he was like, all right, I did three songs, like I'm ready. So he was really excited to do it as well, which if he hadn't been, I'm sure that would have shown through, but like his excitement was equal to mine.
Right. That's good. Yeah. I probably would have been able to tell if he was just like not into it or whatever.
Yeah,
and he's just like, here we go, I guess.
Yeah.
So you brought up Delaney Talks to Statues, which is the song that he wrote for you. It was so funny when sort of this started coming out. I, you know, would post like, what songs do people want to hear? Like on my podcast, social media, and people could say like, you know, whatever songs. This one was really popular. And actually in the course of sort of talking to people because of the podcast, asking questions on social media, there are quite a number of people that have named their kid Delaney, I've discovered. I didn't know this was a thing. But even one of the people that I interviewed for the podcast, like his daughter's name is Delaney. Do you have feelings about the fact that there's just a bunch of people out there named after you?
I mean, I guess I never really think about it. I don't know. I think it's nice. Like, I don't mind. Like, I like my name, so I'm glad other people like their name. You know, it's funny because it's my middle name and my first name is Sarah, but I've never gone by Sarah. So I've only ever gone by Delaney, but I don't know. It's pretty... But, you know, like there are other Delaneys out there who aren't named after him and then some are. I wonder if I've met people and they are named that and they don't know who my dad is.
Right.
And I have no idea. But like I actually haven't met that many Delaneys. So I think I have no idea.
Yeah.
But it's just strange. I guess it's strange. I think there's probably people named a lot of people named after my sister as well. But
yeah.
Maybe because my name was actually in the song, it's different. I don't know, but I've never really thought about it. I guess it's strange, but I mean, it's nice. It's flattering. Like, I like my name, so I'm glad other people like it too, I guess would be my general thought.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's a really cool name. It's pretty unique. I mean, I've never actually met anyone in real life that has that name. I just sort of, after this, like with this podcast and with these songs sort of coming out again, I just had quite a number of people, or I saw them posting in Facebook groups or whatever that were like, oh yeah, like we named our daughter Delaney because of this song.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of like a funny thing of like, I mean, it is a really cool name. So,
well, I think it's gaining popularity, not because of me whatsoever, but I mean, I think like what's funny is I think it's kind of a unisex name. And I think there's a lot now more people naming their, like kids, like unisex names, like Charlie for a girl. But what's interesting is like, I sometimes have to Google like popular girl names, not for myself. I'm not having a child, but for work. Like if I'm like writing something and I can't think of a name, like I'll have to Google it. And I saw the other day, like popular girl names, and it was on there and I was like, oh, Like, it's maybe it's getting more popular. And I was like, okay. But I think maybe because it's like now the trend of, because I think it's a boy's name too. Like, it was my grandfather's name. So that's why I think I associate it with that. But it's definitely, yeah. I know a lot more like female Charlies now. So I'm wondering if that's like going to become a thing, but I don't know.
I feel like that's true. I always really liked, I also am not having a kid, but you know, like you just think about names.
Yeah,
like if I ever had a kid or whatever.
Yeah.
And I always was a big fan of like what are sort of more, maybe more traditionally guys' names for girls, like Max. I really like the name. You're a little younger than me, so maybe you never watched it, but there was this show called Dark Angel. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
Never saw it.
It has Jessica Alba. It came out when I was like in high school. Anyway, her character's name was Max, and I just thought that was like the coolest.
Yeah, I think it's cool. It's like cool now.
Yeah.
But like mine's like more feminine than that, but like I like Charlie and Max. I think that those are like cool like names for daughters, hypothetically.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I think the song too is really popular. It's maybe not so much like because of you, but just because people really love this song. And I think Jim even said this in the video, that people seem to really connect with the songs that are about the kids, because I think especially people who have kids, right? Like if you're a dad and you have a daughter and like maybe you connect to those songs in a different way than, you know, like I connect to that song. Although, I mean, I do like that song a lot, but so I think those songs are really popular. That one and Little Miss Magic, like people love those songs. So I'm not at all surprised that they got picked for this. But some of the other songs that I feel like are a little more obscure. The songs were picked based on those initial like social media posts where people like commented ideas for songs, right? Or how did you choose what songs were going to be on?
I think it was, there was like a grid basically from the social media, and it was the ones that were most requested. They tallied up. So like the ones that were most requested were all in there and like highlighted. And then there were like, you know, the other contenders, and we basically combed through, and like, there were some that my dad really responded to. He did all the ones that were most requested, but then like for the other, we kept doing the videos. And so we wanted to do more videos, so he went through the ones that were like the other contenders and was like, oh, I would love to do this, or like, I have a great story about this. And so that's sort of how they ended up being chosen. But yeah, I think Little Miss Magic, and you know, I think that one as well, as Delaney talks to Statue, I think it is sort of, you know, the ability to relate to children. And I think, you know, because the other ones were, I feel like, much deeper cuts, but I think that's sort of, you know, I think there's so many songs by the musicians too, where I think I'm trying to think of them, but I can't, where I'm like, oh, these are so sweet. And they're like a father daughter song.
Yeah.
You know, you would dance to your wedding too. And I think those are probably really popular for those artists too. So I think that makes sense.
Yeah. That's cool that it was actually based on the songs that the fans really wanted to hear.
Yeah.
And then also a few of Jimmy's picks too. I was really surprised because before any of the videos came out, I was like, man, I really wish they would do something so feminine about Mandolin, because I really love that song, but I'm sure they never will. The first video, or one of the first videos. And I was so excited, but I love that one especially because I already loved that song, but I thought I was like one of the only, I mean, not the only people, obviously there's like tons of people out there that are Jimmy Buffett fans, but I had never really met anyone else that was super into that song. But then once it was one of the videos, I started hearing all these people like, oh, this is one of my favorite songs. And I was like, oh, it's not just me that loves this song. There's a lot of people out there. And then the story part of that was just cracked me up when you were like asking your dad about who he wrote it with, and he like couldn't remember. And then you guys like called your mom on the phone. that was so funny. And so that's really cool to like get to hear, you know, that stuff about each of the songs. Had you heard all those stories? Like, you know, over the course of your life, is your dad just like, oh, here's stories about things that I've done? Or were any of those stories new to you as well?
I think a lot of them are new to me, honestly. I mean, he tells a lot of stories, and so does my mom. But I had no idea she wrote a song with him. There was a lot of other stories I had no idea. You know, I think I've always, you know, I'm I'm older now and I think I'm curious, but I think, you know, when I was younger, I didn't have a curiosity about my parents' past, but I think as I, you know, I was combing through the photos for this as well, like I became even more interested, like, oh, where was that taken? Or like, why were you guys here? And I think as I'm older, they're more comfortable telling me stories as well. So, but for the most part, I hadn't really heard a lot of those, you know, as I said, is something so feminine about a mandolin, or like, you know, I had known that Captain the Kid was about, I guess it would be my great great grandfather, but you know, there were a lot of, you know, I know the general story about him, right? That I've heard of him, you know, going to playing in New Orleans and going to Nashville. I know the trajectory, but a lot of like the details that colored those moments weren't told to me, or I hadn't been interested, I guess. That's not to say I love hearing stories about them and my family, but I think it's as I get older, I think my curiosity will grow because I want to, you know, hear what their life was like when they were my age or what they were doing. So for the most part, I hadn't heard. So that was fun for me. You know, I think that it was so funny. I didn't think my mom would pick up, but she did when that moment happened. And I didn't know if she would not perform, but I didn't know if she was going to be on or not, but she was. So that was fun. And you know, there are other, like, there's stories about, you know, Key West or St. Bart's or the road or New Orleans that I didn't know. And I love to hear them because, you know, there's a cast of characters that I grew up with or I know and have been around. So to know what their former life was before I came along, which I think it was quite different, is always interesting to hear.
Yeah. And I'm sure, you know, when you're younger too, you're like, oh God, Dad, like, I don't want to hear about your stupid stories.
Yeah, yeah.
Like just the nature of being like a kid and a teenager, kid. Right. Is like, you're just like, oh God, Dad, you're always telling these stories and you don't really, like, even if he had told those stories, like you might not have really listened that closely or appreciated it, but you're right. Like now that it's like, oh, like I'm an adult, can actually like appreciate some of these things. So
yeah,
that's absolutely really cool. And it seemed like, you know, for him too, like reliving some of that stuff. Like I know, like in one of the videos, he got a little teared up. Just like, I'm sure he also doesn't always like deep dive into some of those memories and some of the stories behind this stuff. So it seemed like it like brought up those things for him again as well.
Oh, definitely. He gets very emotional, and he got very emotional throughout. And I think it was good for him. I think. Obviously, like you said, this pandemic is absolutely horrible, but I've heard several people mention that the silver lining is, you know, getting to spend time with family and getting to like process things more or really think about things. And I think he was able to really sit down and think about and remember and take a breath from his busy life and sort of reflect. And I think that was good for him.
Yeah, that's great. And also just like you said, spending time together as like this is a thing you're doing as a family, you know, kind of, so that's nice. Including the dogs. I love when the dogs were on. You get to see
your dogs in some of the
videos.
They're always in there. They always would interrupt too. One of them would always beg, but the two of them were always sitting on the bed when we would interview, and they were normally a good audience, but a lot of the time they would get hungry.
So it's they're attended. Like, why are you doing this? Please feed us now.
Yes, they're always hungry, but yeah. So he would have to feed them.
Do you have any pets of your own, or is that just the family dogs there?
No, I also have the same dog they have. So she's sitting right next to me, actually. Aww. So we all, there's a point when we were all home together this summer and we had five dogs in the house. So.
Honestly, that sounds like a pretty good quarantine to me.
It was fun.
I love a lot of dogs.
Yeah, we're all big dog and pet people, and so it's a lot of fun to have all the pups under one roof hanging out. So, but yeah, we all have dogs. Mine was a quarantine dog, but my brother and sister both have dogs too. So it's a lot of fun, and my parents are, those dogs are their children at this point. So.
Yeah, I feel like you see a lot of the dogs on like the show on, you know, like on the Jimmy Buffett social media, like on Facebook or whatever, which, yeah, I'm like, oh, there's another cute, like, oh, here's a picture of Jimmy Buffett. Okay. But like, then, oh, here's a dog picture. That's what the people really want to see.
They're highly featured.
I'm just curious because it seems like as, you know, growing up as a kid of Jimmy Buffett, probably traveled a ton. So I'm sure, like, even about the video about Delaney Talks of Statues, he mentions like part of the lyrics is based on when you guys were in Rome. Do you have any favorite places to travel, either with that you've gone with your family or on your own?
Yeah, I mean, I love to travel, and we traveled a lot, fortunately, when I was a kid. So I think trying to think of where my favorite place was that I went with my family. And
sorry, putting you on the spot.
I'll think about that.
There's just really a lot, I'm sure.
No, it's just, I'm trying to think of my favorite place that I've ever been. When I was in college, I spent a semester in Australia and I traveled. I did a road trip with my friends through New Zealand. And I think that was my favorite place I've ever been. Just because like the landscape, it was like out of a Dr. Seuss novel is all I can say. It was like the Lorax. It was crazy. And being able to drive through all of these like very close, but different, what's the word I'm looking for? Like climates, diverse. Almost like diverse landscape, I guess you would say.
Yeah.
It was like, we went to like a glacier and then we went horseback riding and it was really fun too because I was in college and I was with two of my best friends and we were just renting a car and we got to like drive for 10 days straight and there's no people there, so that was pretty unbelievable. That was probably one of the coolest places I've ever been. I would say with my parents, I think my favorite place I've ever been would be, I mean, honestly, we went to Panama when I was a kid.
Oh, cool.
And I think that was one of my favorite trips. I love just any beach vacation. Not to make myself a cliche, but
listen, you're preaching to the choir here. Don't worry about it.
But I, you know, it was cool because I loved Panama because it was like the Pacific on one side and the Atlantic on one side. So we got to see all these, I think when you're a kid, the coolest thing in the world is wild animals. So we got to see like snakes and monkeys, but then we also got to snorkel and stuff. So I think Panama was the coolest just because there was so much there and I'd never been anywhere like that before. And, so it was really fun. And I was like at that age where like everything was so cool. And even like learning about like the Panama Canal was so cool. So I think that probably would be my favorite trip.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really awesome. Australia and New Zealand both have very diverse animal life too. So I'm sure that was a part of that. My aunt and uncle live in Australia, so I've been a couple times and only to New Zealand once, but my favorite part was seeing the penguins. Did you see the penguins in New Zealand?
No, I didn't.
Oh, they're so cute. Because, you know, in your mind, you picture penguins only being, like, you know, in, like, Antarctica or wherever.
Yeah.
Or is it the other one?
Wow. I don't know.
I clearly don't know where penguins live. One of the poles. The North Pole, because that's where Santa lives? No.
Yes.
Anyway, so like you don't really picture that like ever getting to see them in the wild, but in New Zealand they, you know, have them just like live on the beach there. Anyway, they're super cute. So yeah, I'm super into wildlife and stuff too. So I think that sounds really awesome going to Panama.
Yeah, those are the
all the stuff there.
And New Zealand and Australia are the best like place for that. Especially like being able to snorkel and I don't scuba dive. You could probably keep me see or if you say I snorkel. I'm too afraid to scuba dive, so I've only ever snorkeled, which is very lame. But like I remember when I was abroad, we went on a spring break trip, this all inclusive trip up to the Great Barrier Reef, and we went on this like big dive boat, and everyone, I think they're pretty loosey-goosey about like regulations in Australia in general. So like everyone got their like diving license in like 45 minutes and then dove. And I was like, this doesn't seem right. And I like was the only person who snorkeled out of the like 40 kids that were on the trip with us. And I don't regret it, but like I always say, people are always like, oh, we should go scuba diving. And I'm like, I actually am more of a snorkeler. So
that's super funny, actually, because the first place I ever scuba dived was in Australia at the Great Barrier Reef. And I was in like seventh grade. And I remember thinking, it was like not until later in college that I scuba dived again and like got my license.
Yeah, exactly.
But I remember thinking like, wait, so I have to get certified to do it now. But like when I was in Australia, they just, like you said, like gave us like a 10-minute tutorial and then just like set a seventh grader free on the Great Barrier Reef.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, wait, that doesn't really seem like a great idea, but I mean, it went fine. I don't know. But yeah, that's really funny. It really corroborates your story.
No, exactly. Yeah. It was, I remember like everything there was so funny because they're so relaxed compared to Americans, I feel like. And so I always was like, this seems like, I remember it was like four of us. And I was like, I don't think I'm going to do this. It was like one of those. Also, I had heard about open water too. And like, it was on one of the, I remember walking up the like big boat that was like, and we were all piling on from like the harbor in Cairns. And they were doing that clicker thing that to head count.
Oh, yeah.
People who got on the boat, and I remember open water, they like missed the head count too, and that's always in my mind too, and I was like, oh man, like am I walking into a death trap? And I could just think about the ship leaving with like the 100 people and me being left behind underwater.
Yeah, luckily I don't think that movie had come out yet when I went, so yeah. Like wasn't worried about it. Is it like just like, is it specific? Like, is it sharks or is it just being under the water generally? Or like, what's the thing for you?
I don't like feeling trapped. I think it's feeling trapped in like the bends and not being able to surface quickly and like seeing a shark and then being stuck and being like, okay, like, do I get eaten by the shark or do I get the bends? Like what is my like pick your poison? I would love to do it. Like I love being underwater and I think I need to like conquer that fear eventually, but like it's taken me some time. But I think it's more so the feeling of not being able to like escape, I guess, would be it. But like I love diving down and sort of like cruising above a reef. But it's funny, I'm jealous of my friends who scuba dive. My whole family scuba dives but me. So I'm the loner who's still snorkeling. So eventually I hope to change that.
I guess you could, I know it's not very interesting, but like if you got your certification in like a pool, right, then it's not, there's way fewer variables to worry about. So you can just focus on the sort of like being underwater, managing your equipment situation.
Yeah.
And not have to worry about like sharks or whatever.
I know. Hopefully, eventually I need to conquer that fear. It's something I would like to do in my lifetime. But I think for now, eventually I'll do it.
Snorkeling's fun too, so I also love to snorkel. shame in snorkeling for sure.
No shame in snorkeling.
Do you like to sail or like do any of those other sort of ocean related things?
Yeah, I mean, I sailed more as a kid. I did like little sunfish, but I love to go on sailboats and I love sailing, but I myself don't know how to do it. I don't even have like a boating license or anything. I love being out on the water, but I like to surf a lot. I think that's something that another thing that I fearfully do. Like I'm out there and I'm like, what could go wrong? But I really like it and it's fun. If I'm able to, I live in Los Angeles and I rarely surf because I'm afraid to surf in California because of the sharks. And also like the water kind of scares me. And I always like joke about like all like the local surfers I'm intimidated by because like I don't know any of the rules. So, but when I'm like in a place where I'm like, you know, like a learning level situation, I love to surf and that's, I don't know how to sail. I wish I did, but like surfing, I know how to do and can do. And I just love, it's very relaxing and it's like an amazing form of exercise that you only get to do once in a blue moon, that I only get to do once in a blue moon, but I really like.
Is it like, is that something like you picked up because your dad did it, or, you know, like I assume like when you have family members that do stuff, they're just like, oh, you should try this. And then you're like, yeah, okay, cool. Or whatever. Or you're like, no, dad, that's stupid. Or I don't know.
No, we all sort of, I always loved water sports. I always loved to like wakeboard and stuff. And we all learned together when I was like 10. So I like took proper lessons and we did like one of those like surf, you know, lessons. And he was loving it at the time. And so he got us all into it and we all love it. Like, we all know how to surf. So it's like a fun family activity to do when we're all together. But definitely he, influenced that a lot. So, but it wasn't like a hard push for us, to all go out and do it together. And it's all something like, rarely, but sometimes it's nice because, you know, we all get to like do it together at some point. And it's a fun family activity for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really cool. I've only surfed once. It was actually in St. Bart's, which like the beach had this really strong current that went parallel to the beach. So
yeah,
like it was not the best. It was fun, but it was like not the best learning environment for your first time surfing. So I was like super tired out after like 15 minutes or something, but I would really love to try again in, like you said, a really friendly, like maybe in like Hawaii, somewhere where there's like small waves and the water is warm. And
yeah, if it's the wrong conditions, it's so scary because it's like, it's not even fun, you know. We always, my friend who doesn't really know how to surf that well, but she always jokes like, you feel like you've been like beat up after you come out of the water because you're just like, you're being pummeled and you're, you know, like you're gasping for breath when you're going underwater. So it's like if you're in like a bad place for like learning, it can be such an unpleasant experience. But like once you get to like a good, if it's like a calm, nice day, it's so fun to just be able to like fall and not worry about like falling to your death on a reef, which I think sometimes happens.
Yeah. And also it takes a lot of upper body strength, which like I don't really have. So it was just super tiring is the main thing that I remember about it. But it seemed like it would be fun if you weren't exhausted after 15 minutes. So I definitely would like to give that another shot. So you live in LA now and you are a filmmaker, which I want to talk about, not just for the Songs You Don't Know by Heart series, but that is your career. That's what you do. Is that why you live in LA? Because it's kind of like, you know, filmmaking land over there or?
Yeah. I lived in New York for a while after college and I was PAing a bit in LA and a bit in New Orleans, and I sort of realized in doing that like it was easier. I sort of decided that I wanted to write more, which is mainly what I'm trying to do right now. And for writing, I think it's the place to be for television writing, and I wanted to do that and it was easier. And, you know, it's also, there's a lot of other writers out there and it's sort of nice to have that camaraderie, because it's a tough industry. And it's been great and I love living out there, but yeah, that's sort of why I love the weather. I think having grown up in Florida, I do a lot better in a warmer climate. That being said, I love New York. But I think it was kind of crazy that, you know, I went to school in the Northeast. So I was, you know, from the time I was like 14 to 22. So I was sort of like, kind of forgot about what it was like living in a warm climate and, you know, being able to like not worry about bundling up and when you leave the house. And so that's refreshing and nice. So yeah, I think I moved out there for work, but it's really grown on me and I have a lot of great friends out there and I love the weather. I can't complain. And it's a great city to live in. So.
That's awesome. And you went to school for film too?
I didn't go to school for film. I actually studied criminology
in
college, which I should have done something to help the state of the world. And instead I chose a path in screenwriting. So, but I love criminology.
I mean, I guess it could help you write a lot of good criminology related screenplays.
Yes, it could. When one of those, when one of those comes to me, I will be able to justify choosing that as a major and not becoming a lawyer or some sort of criminologist. But for now, I have not written anything. I mainly write comedy. So, I mean, I think for now I have, I would love to write a hard hitting crime drama, but for now I'm just sticking to comedy, which I think comes easier to me. And hopefully if I hone my craft well enough, I'll eventually be able to get there. But I don't, competing with Law and Order SVU would be very, very tough.
Well, I think it's interesting. I feel like Law and Order has been around for so long, and mm-hmm. I feel like not that young people don't watch it, but I kind of picture that as like an older person. Like, I mean, I've seen it, but not a lot. Like, are there any like really like young focused crime dramas that are like really aimed more at like the demographic of like our generation?
I'm just trying to think right now. Like, what's funny is like, my grandmother's favorite show was Law and Order SVU, but also my best friend's favorite show is Law and Order SVU. Like, she's seen every single episode, but she's an old soul. But there are now, you know, I think like the O's, like they're not as traditionally procedural, but I would say like the Ozarks and the Breaking Bads and, you know, the American Crime Stories or, you know,
Versace. I guess that's true.
Like, they're just like, less procedural or traditional, like, cause I think like you can't really like Law and Order has such like a specific format that like any, you know, anyone trying to duplicate that would be like, this is Law and Order. But I think there are great ones now. There are ones that I watch where I'm like, how the hell did the writer come up with this? You know, like the first time I saw True Detective, I was like, this is crazy. Like, whose mind thinks of this and is able to, you know, put all of this together and have it be tied together with a bow at the end. I'd like to meet them.
That's a good point. Oh yeah. That first, I've only seen the first season, but that first season of True Detective was
so good.
Pretty amazing. Do mm-hmm. you like, totally, I was still thinking about True Detective and then I started to say a new question. I totally forgot.
No, it's okay. Like,
oh yeah. True Detective. Yeah. You have made a couple films, right? Can people see the stuff that you've made so far or?
Yeah. The things that I'm writing, I mean, like I, you know, I'm still very much in that aspiring phase, I would say, but you know, I did a web series I think it was like 3 or 4 years ago. I did a web series that I wrote with my writing partner. That was like 6 episodes, which was sort of like our, you know, I didn't go to film school. And neither did she. So it was sort of our attempt to like crash course in film school. How do we actually like, you know, we were complaining about things we were watching and it's easier said than done, right? It's like, oh my God, this is so bad. Right. And then it's like, okay, you write something. And so we were trying to be better about that. And we wrote something and we made this web series and it was fun. It was great. You know, we got it into a couple festivals and I think it definitely helped kickstart, our, you know, desire and to write, and has helped us in terms of getting us ahead. And you know, I love Unscripted, and you know, I've done a couple short docs, one that's available online, another one I'm still submitting to stuff. But yeah, I've made a couple of things, you know, short stuff that's you know, has gone to a couple of festivals, and other things that I feel like available on Vimeo or YouTube, but I'm still very much in the beginner phase of everything, which, you know, it takes time and I'm trying to be quite patient with it. But fortunately for me, I get to write with my best friend as my writing partner. So it's been, a fun process that I'm grateful for.
Yeah, that's great. What are the names of the, I don't know if you said any of the titles. If people wanted to like try to look stuff up on the internet.
Oh, sure. one is called The Spring, which is available on Vimeo. And that's about Wikiwachi Springs, which is a mermaid amusement park in Florida. And that's on Vimeo. I don't think it's on YouTube, but you can just Vimeo the spring with my name and it should come up. And then the other web series called City of Angles. Like, I don't even want to promote that because I feel bad making people watch web series, but that's available on YouTube and Vimeo. And you can just search my name with that as well, I think, and it should come up, my name or my writing partner's name, which is Katie Corwin. But yeah, those are the things I've done. But
cool.
They are older now. Like, I haven't watched them in a while, so I'm always like nervous. I'm like, well, I don't know if they're even funny anymore. Were they even funny? So
I'm sure you can't really be that. Like, once again, like, it's hard to be objective about your own stuff.
Oh, so. Very hard. Very hard.
But I think people would be interested, you know, and especially sure. Like, if you're going to be doing more stuff in the future, like,
yeah,
we want to support you. So,
thank you. I appreciate so that.
People can go check that out. Did yeah. you, what, you clearly weren't like from a little kid, like, I'm going to make films. So like, what made you after the criminology degree be like, this isn't really for me, and instead I want to do this thing, besides just, you know, seeing stuff and thinking like, oh, well, that's not that good and I could do a better job.
I think, I don't know. I don't even know if I, that's funny. You think that and you're like, God, I mean, damn, I guess this is hard.
Yeah.
You watch every, now I watch, yeah, now I'll watch movies and I'm like, this is stupid. And then I'm like, no, it's not stupid. That writer spent years crafting that world and like, and years thinking of that line and years this, like, you little brat, you have no, to my former self, you have no idea what it takes for someone to put like, put a, you know, effort into something and actually get it made is a feat. But I always loved writing, I think, and I sometimes wish that I had, you know, dedicated more time to writing in college. And I was working in entertainment when I graduated, but like as an assistant in like a marketing position. And I just started taking screenwriting classes and I was like, I really like doing this. I love writing. And I wanted to just give it a shot. And I think from there, but like, no, when I was growing up, I don't think I knew what I wanted to do. I think like I wanted to be a lawyer at one point, hence the criminology. I wanted to, you know, I'm trying to think. I think I wanted to be like a journalist at some point, you know, like all of the dream, the
right.
standard dream jobs, like short of like an astronaut. But I think I didn't know really what I wanted to do, but I just knew I loved writing. And then when my writing partner and I started doing it together, I just loved being on set. And then when I was a PA, I was like, this is the most stressful thing in the entire world, but I love it. And, you know, I love, despite the like hours and, you know, work that went into it, I just liked the energy of set and I loved the people and the people I worked with, and I just thought it was so fun. And I think I've really started to more shift towards writing just because I think it's just more of my, I don't know, comfort level. And I think it's something that I've always loved to do. So just the idea of being able to get to do that professionally is just amazing to me.
Yeah. I mean, and this is true for anyone. I think if you find something that you really enjoy doing and it's feasible to do that, you know, in a way that you can live your life still, you know, and survive, I guess. Like that's really awesome. I think a lot of people take a lot of time or maybe never really find that thing that they really love to do and, you know, are passionate about doing. So, like if you had become a lawyer, you might be miserable. So like that wouldn't have been better.
Yeah. I mean, I wish I you know, my friends who are lawyers, you know, they are work so hard. And I think it is something that I love the idea of sitting in a court and like defending someone and reading all these things, you know, everything that a lawyer does, but it is so hard. And my friends were in law school. Like, I'm like, it is so admirable what you do and the amount of school you have to go to and studying for the bar and all of this stuff. And I was like, I don't think I could cut it. I also am a very sensitive person. And I think it's like, it's such a tough job and cutthroat to become partner. And you know, I think I would have just crumbled with stress, which is why my friends, I'm like, I don't know how you do it.
Yeah. I definitely could not do that job. And I'm sure too, like there's, you know, if you're, once again, like I have no experience in being a lawyer, but it seems like, you know, it's kind of like you either have to end up taking clients that you don't necessarily like, if you're kind of a sensitive person and like have a strong sense of right and wrong,
yeah,
I can see it being really hard if you end up having to take on clients that you like don't really want to, if you're like a defense lawyer or whatever, or like being involved in a case where like you know that like the outcome is going to be different than what you think it should be. Like I could see that being really hard too.
I think especially
a person like you mentioned before, like you really, you know, would like to be able to help people, like a kind of person that like wants to be able to like do some good in the world and help people. And lots of lawyers do a lot of good. I'm not saying that they don't. But I think there's more potential to end up not being able to sort of control the kinds of clients that you have to take on.
No, it's true. I think it's such a complex job too, with you know, and my mom was always like, you'd make a good lawyer. And I was like, well, okay. I think that's probably why I thought about it. And then I was like, mom, I think you're really wrong about that. But no, I'm so happy and I feel very lucky to be able to, you know, try to do what I want to do and do it with people that I love. And I'm fortunately surrounded by a bunch of amazing and supportive friends and family. And it's great, you know, to have that. And I just love to write so much. So it's, you know, like, I think, I don't know anyone, I mean, it's so hard. And some days I'm like, oh my God, I don't know if I can do this. But I think, you know, that's how everyone feels about their job. And I think there are jobs that are a lot harder than writing a screenplay. So I really don't like to complain.
Anything worthwhile, you know, doesn't necessarily come easily all the time.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Well, in the spirit of helping people or whatever you like to support, it's just like me. I'm the only person that does this podcast, but the podcast is doing this thing where, being a Jimmy Buffett fan, especially if you're in like the Parrothead Club, is giving back and helping people. That's like charity work and stuff is actually a big part of being in the club. So, since this podcast is a lot to do with just being a Parrothead and all the stuff, I've implemented a segment where each guest gets to pick a charity, either one you love or one you think really needs support right now. And then the podcast, AKA me, is going to make a donation. So have a charity that you would like to choose?
Yes. So there's one that I think maybe this is the criminologist in me, but there's this a nonprofit legal organization called the Innocence Project. I don't know if you've heard of it. Mm-hmm. And basically they help to exonerate wrongly convicted people. And they do amazing work. I think they just exonerated someone who'd been falsely accused and in jail for 19 years and they released him. And they do a lot of criminal justice reform work. And I think, you know, I find that their work and the way that they've organized and everything they do is just amazing. And the stories too of these people and you know, unfortunately, I think they said like the amount of cases they have versus what people they've been able to exonerate is small, but they've made like a huge impact, especially like with the DNA testing that is now available and that they're working to use. So I just think it's a really great cause. And I think it helps with the overall issue of the prison system in America, which is overpopulated and very unfortunate. So I think that would be the one that I the nonprofit that I pay attention to. And I really think does amazing work.
Awesome. Yeah, I have heard of them. And I agree, it's kind of a really important thing. So the podcast will be making a donation. I'm not like rich or anything, so it's not a huge donation, but everything that helps.
Anything helps.
And also part of it is just to raise awareness for these organizations. Yeah, too. So now, like, everyone listening to this podcast, if you haven't heard of that, like, please go check it out. Obviously no one's obligated to donate money, but just to, I feel like sometimes people, you know, just to get organizations out there to the people listening to. So thank you so much for coming in that. That was like the only question ahead of time. I was like, oh, I should probably prep her for this, so she's not just like trying to think of something on the spot. Although it sounds like maybe you would have been able to come up with that pretty easily, since you seem pretty passionate about it.
I don't know if I would. I feel like I needed a second to think about it. So I appreciate you sending me. I would have been like, I would have been maybe like, oh, I don't know what to say, but no, I appreciate the heads up.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I don't want to take up too much of your time here. We're almost at an hour, but I did want to ask you, just going back to the Songs You Don't Know by Heart series. Once again, everyone, please go check that out if you haven't already. You know, not to shame you, but if you're a Jimmy Buffett fan who's listening to this podcast, like, why haven't you watched those? No, but really, they're really, really great. And it's just like a really fun to get to see Jimmy in that situation. And just hearing you, you know, ask him the questions and stuff too. And like, it seemed like you prepped and had some stats ready. And one of the things that I thought was really interesting was hearing how many, for a lot of the songs, you would say like how many times he's played those songs live before. How did you find that out? Like, did you have to go back and look at old set lists, or is there like a running tally of that somewhere?
I think, you know, who found it was Dylan. And I think that he found it on, I don't know what he found it on, but he was the one who found all of the numbers. And basically I was working from a sheet that he had. He's more of a numbers person than I am by a mile. Like, I will text him for help with simple math, but he basically put together this incredibly organized spreadsheet that like was how it was by most requested. And then it had every number of times it was played, you know, who wrote it. So like the way that I was able to, like, you know, he would also pry, he would also like poke me to ask questions too. He'd be like, ask your dad who he wrote that with, or like stuff like that. So he like was the one who did a lot of the research and had access to like those records. And I want to say he found them online, but 'cause my dad mentioned something about them being on a website, but I'm actually not positive, because thankfully Dylan was the one who presented that amazing spreadsheet for me to go off of.
That's really awesome to like have that information though. And you were on my friend Dan Smith's podcast, and Dylan was on too, right, as a guest? If people want to hear more from Dylan, they can go and, or also more from you, they can go listen to that episode of Dan Smith, like, classic Buffett podcast as well.
Absolutely.
And it's actually called Stories We Could Tell. So don't look up Classic Buffett, because you won't find the podcast under that. but I was really shocked. So Love in the Library is like one of my favorite songs. And according to what you said on the video, it had only been played once ever live, which is crazy to me. I mean, he has so many songs, so I guess it's not that crazy. But I don't know. Like, I love that song. So hopefully another thing that comes out of this is that maybe he will play some of these songs more live, like once we go back to being able to do live shows and stuff.
I think he will. He said too, like, I think he said he wanted to include one of the videos more of, like, now that they've been requested, including them actually in the set list.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Because I know, so besides Something So Feminine About a Mandolin, one of my other favorite songs is Why Know and I Know. And he did actually play that live at a show that I've been to. And I remember being so excited when he played that, because it's just one of those songs, like a lot of these, that I never really expected to hear live, because, you know, like, he's kind of obligated to play Margaritaville and all of those. Which, and I'm sure, you know, once again, when you have so many songs, you can't always remember them all the time. So it's kind of like you have to have a set list going into like a tour. So you can't just like add, I'm sure, like, you know, it's like you would really have to be like, okay, well, I really want to play this specific deep cut on the tour, and then learn it and add it. So I totally understand that he doesn't do that. But yeah, it would be, I just remember being really excited that time that he played Why Know and I Know. So I know it would be really fun to hear some of these.
Yeah, I bet once he gets back out there, he'll for sure add them and throw them in there. I think he wants to now, because he also is so practiced with them.
Yeah, he knows them now.
Yeah.
After that. I just wanted to ask you what, so in one of the videos for Tin Cup Chalice, you said that that's maybe your favorite song of his. Mm-hmm. Do you have any other favorites that he didn't play in this round that you, if you were ever going to make more of this kind of thing, that you would really like him to play? Or did he sort of hit the ones that you like the most?
He hit them, but I mean, I really like Nautical Wheelers. I think that's one of my favorites. And then, think what else? I like Coast of Marseille, which I don't know who he wrote that with, if he wrote it, but those are two of, I would say off the top of my head, my favorites that he hadn't done. I think those, I mean, he covered a lot of them, but if I, those are the two that I like most, I think, other than Tin Cup, and I like Wino and I Know too. And,
And you're obligated to like Delaney Talks a Statue.
Yeah, I'm obligated. I'm obligated to like.
I mean, I'm sure you actually like it too. But
no, I really like it. I know I like it. But no, that's the one that I should have said first.
Right. Like, you're like, oh yeah, Tin Cup Chalice is my favorite song. And Jimmy's like, oh.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. Yeah.
I mean, he didn't. That would have been a funny joke, but he didn't actually.
He didn't react that way. That was like the 95th take where I was like, all right, well.
Thanks again so much for being on.
Thanks so much for having me.
If you ever want to come back, and we don't have to talk about Jimmy Buffett at all, like if you just want to talk about hanging out in Australia for an hour, like I'm down for that. Podcast is pretty loosey goosey in terms of, it's just like anything that like I can kind of tangentially relate to, like being a Jimmy Buffett fan or like living the lifestyle. So like surfing, traveling, all of that is stuff I love to talk about. So
amazing.
I know you said you're not on Instagram anymore, which is really funny because when they first started posting these videos, the Songs You Don't Know by Heart videos, they tagged you in Instagram stories, like your Instagram account. So I followed you because of that. I wasn't following you before. And I like looked at your Instagram and there's a lot of pictures on there that I was like, oh, this girl is my jam. There's like a Midsummer reference. There's like a Hocus Pocus costume situation. There's like a lot of dressing up.
I love dressing up.
If you ever want to talk about that.
No, I love dressing. Halloween's a big thing with me and my friends. No, I say I delete social media, but I've taken a break from it. My account, it still very exists. I wouldn't follow me. I don't post that much. I don't have a lot of interesting stuff right now, but I mean, I'm still on there, but if you want to take a look at posts from 4 years ago of me in a costume too, then that could be fun, but I haven't posted a lot lately. But I hopefully when I'm able to get a grip on my addiction to social media, I will be able to return with a healthier relationship to Instagram. So
I feel you. So like especially if people maybe want to follow like what you do in the future, is there art, like should they just follow you on social media now and then
they can just come back, or they can just follow me? I hope if I come back, it'll be with that account. Again, my best friend has the password. She's the keeper of it. And eventually I will earn it back. I'll get it back. Right now she won't give it to me. So
that's a good best friend. And also clearly you have to really trust someone to give them your password and you not have it. So that's real friendship right there for sure.
Well, I hope she's not like, I don't know, not doing posting weird stuff on it, but I don't think she is.
I don't think so. I think I looked at it pretty recently and that wasn't anything. Yeah. I just remember being, I was like, oh, she like likes costumes and theme parties. That's what I like. But what is it? If people do want to follow, what's the account?
Oh, it's just at Delaney Buffett.
Okay. So that's on Instagram. People can follow you if they want. They can go check out your stuff on the internet. Thanks. I've really had a really great time talking to you.
Yeah, it was so much fun talking to you. Thank you so much again for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for agreeing to be on and not being totally burnt out after like 10 interviews
in the last month. I'm so happy to do it. I've got a lot of spare time right now, so it's a great way to spend it.
Well, you're totally welcome anytime. You know, if you want to come back with Dylan or just to hang out, like I am just not going anywhere or doing anything. So
Dylan's very funny. If you have him on, you should have him on his own.
I would be happy to have him on. I'm going to be honest. I didn't listen to Dan's episode because I didn't want it to like influence.
Sure. Yeah.
It's like, I didn't want to be like, oh, well, he already asked that, so I shouldn't ask that or anything like that. So I haven't listened to that. But now that we've chatted, I'll probably go back and listen to that. But yeah, awesome. Dylan's welcome to come on if he wants. But yeah, I had a great time. And I hope you have an awesome rest of your day.
Thanks so much. You too.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Well, that was a super fun time. It's fun to get to talk to her just because, I don't know, she's just real cool and laid back. And it just felt like, you know, an easy chat or whatever. Like I said, I didn't initially was a little reluctant to ask her because I didn't want it to seem like I was like, just come on here to talk about your dad or whatever. But she's a fun and interesting person. So it was just as nice to learn a little more about her and what she's up to. I hope you will go check out her stuff that she's done and in the future, any projects and things that she's working on. And I'm excited to make a donation to her charity of choice, which is the Innocence Project. I'll be doing that around when this episode comes out, and I will probably do a separate post from the episode, just focus on the charity so people can get more information about it and all of that. If you're interested in learning more about it or, you know, making your own donation or just to raise awareness generally. So, I mean, I'll probably tag it in this post and then also do a separate post with a little more info. So it's cool to have her on, and I'm think it's fun to do this sort of like have the guest pick the charity because, I mean, obviously I have things that are close to my heart, but I think it's nice to get like a wider variety. And so every guest is going to have a different thing that they're passionate about, you know, that they really want to help support. And so I think that's really a cool way to, instead of me just making random donations, to really focus these donations in ways that support the things that the guests are really passionate about. Because I know I'm the host, but like this podcast is really about getting to talk to people and meeting them and learning about them. And it's really about the guests. So I'm super excited that she chose a rad charity, and I hope you will go check that out, learn more about it. Like I said before, the donations for that are partly coming from listener support and then partly just from me and my own money. So if you are listening on Anchor or if you'd like to support the podcast, you can go to Anchor, the link to listen on Anchor, and I will have that posted if you're not already listening on Anchor. And just right there on the homepage, there's a support button. You can just hit that to support the podcast. It's kind of like Patreon style monthly supporting. And the base, like first lowest amount you can support is 99 cents. So, you know, no obligation, but if you don't have interest in supporting necessarily like me buying new equipment for the podcast and that kind of thing, just know that that money is also going to these different nonprofits that are being chosen by the guests, a portion of it. So you are not only helping the podcast, but you're also helping a lot of other organizations that are important and need support. So you can do that there. If you don't, though, that's totally fine. No pressure. I'm just happy that you listened. And if you have any feedback or, you know, if you are excited about the episode or anything you would like to share with me, you can email me at blameitonbuffettpodcast@gmail.com. And you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram are both at Blame Buffett Pod. You can always comment or message me there. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please, if you are liking it, leave a star review, leave a comment. That really helps sort of other people see it. The more feedback there is on the Apple Podcast page. And yeah, I just really appreciate you listening. And because I think there's probably a chance that maybe we have some new listeners because of this episode, because I know like some people are going to hopefully want to listen to Delaney and see what she's all about, because she's rad. I didn't introduce myself at the beginning because I don't usually, but my name is Aaliyah and I am the host of Blame It on Buffett. I started it at the beginning of this year. Actually, my first episode was in January. So we are almost coming to a full year of doing this podcast, which is very exciting for me, that just, even though I'm not doing it as often, like just to keep it going through a lot of weird stuff has happened this year. If you are a past listener, you'll know, you know, just the life has taken some twists and turns, but we're still here and we're still doing episodes. And I'm hoping that in the new year, especially after I move, I'll be able to get back to doing a little bit more regularly. And hopefully we continue to have cool people on. Like I said, Delaney's welcome back anytime. Maybe we can get Dylan on here. If you have ideas of people you'd like to see on, I mean, I can't guarantee anything, but you're welcome to send them to me. And yeah, just really the main thing is thank you so much for listening. Thank you everyone who has supported this podcast just with your, you know, not just financially, but like with your comments and your just sharing it, telling your friends about it. I love when I get emails from you guys that like, oh, I have a story related to the thing you talked about, or, oh, that thing really meant a lot to me. I know Delaney and I talked a little bit in this episode about, you know, how Delaney Talks to Statues, Little Miss Magic, those songs probably mean a lot, you know, and hit harder for people that like have kids and have that relationship. You know, and I've gotten a few stories from people, like I said, that like, oh yeah, we named our kid Delaney, or, you know, I danced with my daughter to Little Miss Magic at her wedding. I love hearing those kinds of things. Like, I love hearing your Buffett related stories, and how it affected your life. You know, that's really what this podcast is about. Not just Jimmy, but how his sort of presence and lifestyle has affected people and how they live their life. So yeah, don't be afraid to send me your thoughts and comments. I just thank you so much for everyone that's listened this year. I guess this is like the last episode of the year, and then the next one will be in January. So I had a really great time this year with you all. For those of you who have been with me since the beginning, thank you so much. For any new listeners, like, thanks for tuning in. Even if this is the only episode you listen to, I really, really appreciate it. I never honestly thought when I started this that I would even have anyone that cared about the podcast. So having people that like listen to multiple episodes, listen to every episode, just means the world to me. And I hope you enjoyed this episode with Delaney. She's real great. And I hope you all have a happy holidays, whatever holiday you celebrate. And as always, to finish out the new year, or finish out this year and going into the new year, remember, if anything's going to happen, it's going to happen out there.
Blame it on Buffett. He was my hero.